Welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram, the show where voices are amplified, truth is paramount, and the community drives the dialogue. This week, we reconnect with Earl's dear friend, Robert Miranda, of Fresh Water for Life campaign. We examine the topic of schools, politics in our country, racism in our country, along with who is impacted by this in our communities. Join us for this in-depth conversation with Robert Miranda, and be sure to follow us on civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy your podcast. And please don't forget to like and subscribe as well. Stay tuned. Welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram. I am thrilled to have a gentleman that I have much admiration for and respect because, you know, when you face adversity, as so many of us do in this life is not an easy undertaking. Nobody ever said this life would be easy. There are very few people who are willing to put their lives on the line for truth, justice. You know, I remember as a young boy hearing the term truth, justice, and the American way, and did not know what any of those things meant until after I reached a certain point in my life to realize that talk is always cheap, but action is necessary. And it is with that backdrop that I want to welcome back my good friend and comrade, Mr. Robert Miranda. Good morning to you, my friend. How you doing?
Good morning, my friend. Good morning, Earl. Good morning to everyone. Always a pleasure to be here and be able to say a few words here.
You know, man, tell us a little bit about Robert Miranda.
I don't know. I mean, I'm a child who got a chance to grow up in a time in our country where there were a lot of major changes going on. You know, as a child, I would look on the black and white television and all those Curtis Mathis TVs and watch all the social movements for change. You know, the push to desegregate the South, the attacks that were being levied against people of color who for years had to live under a system of separation. You know, I mean, I could recall times in Texas and other areas where my family would pull up and we'd have to go behind a restaurant to use the bathroom and see signs, you know, that say people of color here. You know, I mean, those things stick to you. Those things, you remember that. You know, you walk into a place and, you know, you see your mother be completely discriminated against. And as a child, you look at how they treat her and how they, I had a strong father, you know, and my father didn't put up with that. You know, and one of the things that really stuck with me was back in like 1971, we went to Cicero, Illinois, and we went into a restaurant, and my dad and my mom and I, we were waiting for, you know, the waitress to come over, but she wouldn't, you know. And my mom kept telling my dad, let's just go. And, you know, at the time, I was about 9 years old,
right?
You know, and I'm thinking to myself, well, what's going on? Why do we have to go? My dad's like, we can go nowhere. They're going to serve me. And my mother would say, no, let's just go. Don't start nothing. He said, no. You know, my dad had broken English.
You right.
know? So you could just imagine, man, we not going no place. We gonna stay here. He and she gonna come and serve me. My dollar is green, just like everybody else's dollar is green. You know, that's the way he's, you know.
Right.
My dad didn't play. And, you know, finally, you know, it was about 15 minutes sitting there. And my mother just basically convinced my dad and said, let's just get up and go.
So this is 1971. And not in Alabama or Arkansas.
No, Cicero, Illinois. I remember that very clearly. Very clearly. I remember it very clearly because when my dad got up and we started getting ready to leave, some white guy said, it's about time the air cleared in this area. And my dad turned around and slapped the dog out of him.
You know.
And that sticks to your mind.
You know, Robert, your parents migrated here from Puerto Rico.
Correct.
And so immigrants.
Right.
And
he was good friends with Roberto Clemente.
Oh man, the great Pittsburgh pirate.
Yeah, and he told me a story about Roberto Clemente in Pittsburgh when Roberto first got to Pittsburgh.
Community activist.
Yeah, and he actually in Pittsburgh, Roberto was denied being able to buy furniture for his family when he first moved into Pittsburgh because of his skin color, and you know, but those things stuck with me. As a young man, and as I grew and understood how the power of bigotry works, how the power of racism and white supremacy works, and saw how it impacted lives of people of color in this country, it gave me that sense of, you know, that need to fight for justice. And over time, I have grown from being a person who's focused on fighting for the rights of people of color to the rights of fighting for humanity's rights.
So people may not know this, and that's why I think it's important that we get your history before we get into our discussion. But you're a Marine. You're a guy who spent 8 years fighting for this nation, the nation that, as you stated, as a young boy, you saw the injustice.
Right.
How were you able to come to a point in, as you got older, that when you went to fight, when you joined the military, were you fighting for democracy? When you knew what was going on in this country?
Yeah, in 1982, I was deployed to Lebanon. I got a chance to see.
No, but why'd you join the military, man, after you saw what was going on?
After seeing everything that is going on, you still hold to that dream, you know? There is,
of what the nation could be?
Yes, you know, because you saw the changes too. Remember, at that time, you were able to see the Voting Rights Act being signed. You were able to see the changes that were going on. And so when seeing that, plus having a very good education, which I really credit my dad and my mom for giving me, they made sure that I was given an education that would give me the kind of abilities mentally to understand things. You believe in the fact that a country like the United States can change, can move on. And that ingrained in me even more when I joined the Marines and was deployed overseas. And when I saw how countries overseas and their populations lived, and realized that in some of those populations, for example, in Turkey, the Kurdish population, they've been living under the kind of oppression and suppression under the Turkish government for hundreds of years. No changes. It's always been that way. You know, you see, for example, in China, the populations that are in China that are a minority, they've been living under that kind of oppression and human tyranny that they've been living under for hundreds of years. But in the United States, we've been able to make those changes and adjustments to try to say, as the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence would say, to form a more perfect union, right? And that's the dream here, is to form a more perfect union. And so I believe in that. I believe we could do that. You know, we have knuckleheads that we have to deal with. We understand that. We understand that old system of bigotry and white supremacy is still strong, and it's stronger today than it was. But The idea here, as Dr. King would say, is to believe in the dream. There is a dream that can be achieved. And over the history of this country, you have seen those changes. We have tangible proof that the changes can be made. These changes can be made when the people bring together their whole idea of a more perfect union. They come together, united, to make those changes and defeat the voices that promote separation, that promote hate. Those voices today have to come together again.
So, Robert, would you say then what your belief, the strong belief that you had and have, was centered around something called democracy, that was the driving force at that point in time?
Democracy plays a very central role in helping to forge those changes. Democracy is the cornerstone of change in a republic. You know, this idea of a dictatorship that the current Mango Mussolini is pushing out right now, this idea that he's throwing out there of a dictatorship is all designed to destroy the people's will, the people's rights, the people's ability to make change on a more collective way. The idea that one individual should be seen as the deal maker, as the decision maker, as the dear leader, we only have to look at North Korea and see what that looks like.
Or Russia.
Russia and China.
Right.
You know, the dictatorships are designed to strengthen the position of the leader, not strengthen the position of the people.
So, Robert, how then, because in our lives, in our lifespans, in our lifetimes, we've witnessed dictatorships in those other nations. We knew what that looked like. America even went to war to prevent those kinds of things from happening. The American people were well aware of those kinds of things. Even in school, we were taught about the differences between those nations and ours. Then how is it possible that we're on the precipice of that happening in this country as we speak?
Well, the voices of white supremacy have become stronger. The bigotry, the hate against people who are non-white population here in this country has gotten emboldened by this individual's presidency. You know, the attacks that he is engaging in right now by establishing military in cities around the country that he is targeting are majority
black run.
He's hiding that they're Democrat. That's BS. These are cities that are black governed,
right?
And that's a subliminal way of electrifying that bigoted base. This is a way to send a message to that base of hate, that base that wants to control this population, meaning black and brown population in the United States, in the way that it used to control back in the 50s and 40s and 30s. These are today kids who come from grandparents and great-grandparents of that time and who over the generations have always been reminded of the good old days, you know, make America great again.
Right.
And those are all subliminal little messages to that population. You know, unfortunately, most of our population doesn't really get it. But eventually, as time goes on, I believe they will, because then they'll start seeing, which is happening now, the differences in treatment of the population. They'll start seeing how militaries are being gathered and put into communities that are their communities. And this, all this happening right now is he is just getting the population used to the idea of seeing soldiers and guns walking the streets.
Do they not understand that this is all antithetical to democracy? As they're watching these things transpire, I mean, I saw as a young boy in 1968, I was 14 years old, and in the city of Milwaukee, after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, I remember the tanks and the National Guard in my community, in my neighborhood, as they were all over this nation, because cities burned after the assassination of Martin Luther King. There were, I don't know, 300 or so cities that were set ablaze. So understandable why the National Guard was brought in, but I do remember distinctly the National Guard being, and that was the time, again, when over 300 some odd cities burned.
Right.
The National Guard being in cities right now in these areas, I don't know if cities being burned, right? and yes, are there, you know, are there problems? Is there unrest taking place in these communities? Are things unsafe in some areas? Yes, I live in Milwaukee. I'm not terrified. I've lived there for over 71 years. I'm not so terrified that I'm going to leave the city that I was born in, the city that I love, because somebody says it's too dangerous for me. I'd also say, Robert, before I give you a chance to respond, for those people and Donald Trump and others who celebrate and say this is the answer, if you begin to think just a little bit, Robert, about the cost of having the National Guard in your city, and how long are they going to remain in cities, Robert? If you say, because we've got the National Guard, crime is going to go down, which is what is being said right now, what are they thinking, that, okay, we're going to stay here forever, or we're going to leave in 2 months because of the sheer $1 million, you know, cost a day of having the National Guard in these different cities, that once they leave, things aren't going to revert back to the... There's no long-term thinking this through, Robert.
No, it's all theatrics. It's all... Our military right now is being used as pawns to shore up the hatred that he wants to fester. He wants to defester that division. He wants to continue to promote the idea that the only way to deal with these people, and that meaning people of color in this country, is by force. That's the only way to deal with them. This is the way they've dealt with us in the past, enforcing Jim Crow laws, enforcing the kind of sundown laws that used to be enforced, you know, using the police to harass and intimidate. Now, taking that same playbook and applying it in today's world, using the military to come after these communities. But notice he's only doing it in communities that are blue state communities,
right,
or Democrat community. He's not going after red states or red states.
Where there's equal amount of crime.
Exactly. Because he doesn't want to show the contradiction of what is going on. He doesn't want to embarrass Speaker Johnson and Freeport, Louisiana.
In New Orleans, where you want to talk about, you know,
you want to talk about crime, yeah, being out of control, look at his district.
Right.
You know, he doesn't want to establish that contradiction. What he wants to do is just focus on one thing, so that base of hate that he empowers, that he promotes, that he elevates, can see that this is the only way to do this. So as his grand plan to eventually destroy democracy in this country, to take over the government and to become the dictator that he wants to be, gives him the luxury of being able to then use the military in all parts of the country and employ them wherever there is dissension against him, not against crime, but dissension eventually against him. And then that will, in his thinking, would intimidate and shut the population up whenever he's making actions that are against the population.
So Robert, in a representative government, we've got all these elected officials on local, state, and national level. That's what democracy, basically, the essence of it is. People representing us. They're watching these things. They're supposed to be the vanguard to the way the system is set up to prevent what is taking place right now in this country, right. But it's not working. Why?
Because I believe a lot of these politicians are compromised. They're very compromised. They have been in office for many, many years, and they have been bought off hundreds of times, and they have benefited tremendously from doing the things that the most powerful, rich elite in this country have wanted them to do. And to then now change their tone and turn against those people leaves them open for removal from office. And a lot of these people who are allowing this happening over the years would not compromise their careers. They were more career oriented than they were representational. They were more into being able to enjoy the fruits of their office rather than giving the fruits of their office to their constituents. And so it is a need, and I agree with a lot of those voices, that change in Washington, D.C. needs to happen. It does have to happen immediately. A lot of these people who have been in office I for over 12, 15 years have grown too comfortable. Too comfortable. And they have forgotten who they really represent. That is, without question, for me, true. I believe that. But to change things in a direction that elevates hatred in this country, separation in this country, the push to demonize people, harm communities because they do not reflect you, they do not reflect your philosophy, they do not reflect your ideology, they do not reflect your beliefs. That is the ingredients that allow for a dictator to rise, and we're seeing that happening now.
So Robert, you hear the terms both Democrat and Republican, my seat, my district, ownership. You know, you hear it, but you don't really think about it. But when you say mine, and I think what happens in this democracy where the voters have a responsibility, democracy is not something, it's a participatory reality. You can't sit back and just, well, I voted, and so my representative who says I'm not going to do something because it's going to risk me losing my seat. The seat doesn't belong to the representative. The seats belong to the taxpayers and the voters. And somewhere along the line, the taxpayers and the voters have lost that understanding. And that's why somebody can sit in the seat for 30 years or 40 years or 20 years,
right.
You know, or even 10 years. You know, I'll say this. You talk about time limits. It's no mistake that a president at the most can get 8 years. Congress people and senators can be reelected. Strom Thurmond and people, Robert Byrd, they were 100 years old, man, for heaven's sakes, still sitting in those seats.
Right.
So when we talk about democracy and the way it's situated and the way we see it as the American citizens, is the answer going to come from the politicians to fix what we know now? We're headed down the path of authoritarianism. We're headed down that path. Who's going to turn that around? Are we making a mistake relying solely on the elected officials to do that? Because they're not going to do it.
The mistake we allowed to happen was for the system to basically dismantle our educational system. And one of the key elements of a democracy is to make sure that the citizenry understands civics. And in the 1980s, they started defunding a lot of programs that promoted civics in our schools. You know, teaching civics is vital and important to the understanding of how government is run, the people's role in a democracy, the people's ability to control their elected representatives. All that is taught in civics classes, and a lot of those civics classes have been dismantled or watered down considerably in our schools around the country. The other element of the destroying our democracy having it done through defunding programs in the schools is courses in schools that taught critical thinking, you know, people's ability to be able to think critically of what they're being taught, questioning some of the things that are being taught. That has been greatly reduced in our schools. I remember going to school back in, again, the 60s and 70s. And in those classes, you were always challenged to question what you read in the book, question what was being said to you. You were challenged. You don't see that anymore. You don't see a regiment, a mandatory curriculum or lesson plan that shows the teacher and tells the teacher, challenge your students the way they should be challenged. Force them to think critically. Get them to read those books. Do what you can. Because the funding has been cut. Because the funding and the resources to schools have been cut. And so it's all designed by the people who are moving in this direction we are today. It was designed long ago. The way to get to where they want to be today was to dismantle the educational system of this country, removing the parts of the system, of the parts and the elements of education that promoted civics, that promoted democracy, that promoted democratic values and how government should be run and run by the people, and to replace it so that people didn't raise questions. They corporatized our educational system. Instead of making better citizens, they said, let's put in courses that make some better consumers. Let's show them how to read ingredients of a label can and be more critical about the foods they eat. Rather than having a balance, they pushed more about the values of a corporate society than they did about a democratic society.
Let me ask you something, Robert. 38% of Americans have 25 and older have a college degree. 38%. And so when we're talking about these things that are pretty complex, you talk about civics. If the majority of the American people, because civics was taught in middle school and high school.
Right.
So the majority of the American people should know something about civics. But even if they knew it and they got it at a very young age. They've forgotten it by now. The fact that they are now controlling, and they have, as you stated, for a long time, the educational system, what is transpiring in this country didn't happen overnight. Okay, so we can say, and people can say, well, look at what Donald Trump has done. Look at what Donald Trump is doing. The magnitude of what is transpiring in this country right now, Robert, has been, this has been put together over half a century, the planning to do what is happening right now. And this is, in my opinion, why we are at such a dangerous point in time. Mm-hmm. Because Donald Trump is one person. Donald Trump will be off the scene. Maybe not soon enough for some of us, but the things that are being put in place right now are going to be everlasting.
Right.
And because, again, he's not doing this on his own. And the fact that that Project 2025, that many people kind of, yeah, okay, yeah, that can't happen. It's right in the heart, is in the middle of happening. Mm-hmm. And you think, okay, so they were able to move on this inside of 6 months. What they've been able to do, Robert, in 6 months' time with Donald Trump is when they came in with their plan in place, and they came in on the ground running. And so they put all this in place in 6 months. He's got 3.5 more years. Mm-hmm. They've gotten all of this in place. They're going to tighten it up over the next three. Can you imagine what it's going to be, man? Well, in 3.5 years from now,
you cannot sustain something like this without fuel, okay? And what is that fuel? What is the fuel that they need to sustain this? What is the fuel that they need, and that it's going to be like a nuclear reactor that's just going to continue to fuel the ship? Exactly.
Yeah.
Hatred. Hate is that fuel. And so as long as they continue to promote hate with their policy, that movement that they currently are on is going to continue. And as long as people in their base continue to eat that up, the policy they don't understand is also hurting them.
Right.
You know, the Medicaid, for example, is being taken from them.
Oh, yeah.
But they don't care, because to them, it's beating up on the liberal. It's stopping these non-white people from getting ahead. You know, I just don't like it when I see a successful black man in a suit in a nice car, and I'm here driving this damn Pinto. You know, it is that hate, you know, and that skinhead over there in D.C., what's that skinhead's name? The bald-headed guy, Miller, Stephen Miller.
Yeah.
You know, the leading Nazi, all right?
It could have been any number of guys, but anyway, I know Steve.
He is the most nasty one. He's right. The nastiest one. I mean, look what he did over at the Union Station. We ain't gonna let these white hippie communists, you know, he sounded like freaking McCarthy. Yeah. You know, it's like, where the hell did this guy, this guy came from a time warp from the 50s. And right. They put him in. This guy is the fuel that they use to promote that hate.
So the hate that, quite frankly, has kind of always been in this country.
Sure.
You talked about the fact that we saw some changes and some doors that opened up. Underneath it, there's always been people in this country who still believe this is a white nation. And it should remain a white nation. And, you know, everybody else is kind of second-class citizens. And, you know, that has been kind of masked for a long time. As a black man, I can tell you 71 years old, that what I see transpiring is more than disheartening to me, because my father lived his entire life never seeing equity and justice in this nation. His father never saw it. I'm not going to see it in my lifetime. You aren't going to see it in yours. My children aren't going to see it in theirs. For heaven's sakes, Robert, at some point in time, we've got to face the realities that the things that we say we are as a nation, the rest of the world is looking at us, and we're pointing our finger at their shortcomings, and the rest of the world is saying, hey, look at how you're treating immigrants. Okay, let's just lay it on the table. So they brought the National Guard into Washington, D.C. They brought them into California, and now they're talking about Chicago and other places. And we're coming in there under the guise of bringing down crime. Are you aware that they're arresting immigrants? Are people aware that they're being used now to gather up immigrants and under the guise of they're criminals?
Right.
But then they're saying, well, a certain percentage of them.
They're arresting immigrants who are in court.
Yes.
Getting their papers and getting everything in order to be legal.
Yeah.
You know, in order to do what they've been doing, to live a dream that they've always lived, and that's to live the American way of life.
Which is what we have.
And you fought, bled, and died for that, right? And again, what you talk about when they say, oh, this is a white nation, this will always be a white nation. But it was a nation that was also built on the backs of black slavery. And it's also the reason why thereafter the history of slavery, for example, is Smithsonian.
Right.
Because they don't want future generations to understand that slavery and the black people of this country were also, in the beginning of this country, a major part in the building of this country.
Well, to be quite frank with you, and this is absolutely true, anybody can challenge it, but if they look at the record, they'll have to admit that what I'm saying is true. The nation was able to build this wealth off of the back of cheap labor and free labor.
Exactly.
The corporations got rich. All of those things happened because for 400 years, there are people who worked here from can't see day to can't see night and didn't get paid a dime.
The Industrial Revolution was the stepping stone for unionization in this country, because the white man was also seeing himself being a slave.
Yeah, right.
He saw what was going on. And so when the Industrial Revolution started moving forward, the white man said, oh, hell no. You ain't going to treat us like slaves. We're going to unionize, and we're going to get paid our due. And so, the class of people that are destroying this country, that are dividing us, that are causing us to turn against each other, are the 800 billionaires that control the economics of this country. 800 billionaires in this country have $7 trillion of the wealth of this country. And 150,000 families in this country only control $4 trillion of wealth of this country. Tell me who's in charge of things in the United States government.
You know, Robert, the fact that those statistics that you just prattled off are more than mind-blowing. And worse yet, they're not accidental.
No.
Okay? It didn't happen in a vacuum. Those things have happened in an organized manner. And so they've happened in that manner, and that's why I think it's so very much improbable that they ever get turned around if we're relying on elected officials to do it. The changes that have transpired in this nation historically have come from the people themselves who became outraged and decided we're not going to take it anymore and rose up. Do you foresee any of that happening? Do you think those times are behind us, or do you think that injustice, as Dr. King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, and the injustice that is taking place right now in this country is going to create a swell of disenchantment?
It's slowly happening. It's slowly building up. You know, you could just look at D.C. and you could see that the people that live there, the people who are there, are building up a movement against this injustice, against this invasion of using military force to go in. You know, there right now, yesterday, for example, there are veterans who are gathering at Union Station to stage sit-ins, who yesterday, several veterans went in front of the White House after Tango, Mussolini there, decided to invoke the executive order against the Constitution of the United States, against flag burning. Yeah. And these veterans went in front of the White House and burned the flag because it is free speech. It is a form of free speech. I don't care how loyal you are to the flag. You know, it's a flag. It represents freedom, and freedom is represented through the Constitution. And the Constitution says freedom of speech. So freedom of speech applies to everything in this country. And so burning of the flag is a form of speech. And you could go ahead and cry and scream and demand all you want. But, you know, these are people who scream and cry and act snowflake-like about that issue. These are the same people who cry and scream and act snowflake about what's going on with Cracker Barrel. They just like to scream and cry about anything.
So Robert, you always make me think and carry these things through the next level. So military guys like you who moved around this world, put their lives on the line for this nation, and supposedly under the guise of democracy. We are fighting for democracy all over the world, which is what they told veterans.
Right.
You know, at the same time, Donald Trump is telling veterans, many of them who are homeless people, get out of Washington, D.C. You've got, at this point in time, all homeless people. Is he not aware that many homeless people are veterans?
Yeah, he's aware. He's aware.
Okay. So
he knows.
Okay. But my point is, you guys, I can talk about democracy. I can talk about the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, all those things as an American citizen. I certainly in this nation have the right to do that. But the truth of the matter is, veterans who paid the price, those veterans who had the courage to go before the White House and burn the flags in spite of what the president of the United, in spite of the outrage that they're going to get. I want to say this to the American people who condemn those veterans who did that. Give it some real thought.
Right.
Don't get so caught up in all of the if you believe in this nation, if you believe in the tenets of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, all of those millions of men who fought, bled, and died for that, then you can't possibly say that those men who stood there and did what they did were wrong.
Right. I mean, and if you're a veteran who stands against them, then you're a white supremacist, in my opinion. All right? You're a bigot. You are falling in line with the hatred movement of this country. You know, you as a veteran should really understand and see that people of color who were in the military were just as committed, just as devoted, just as gung-ho as you to protect this country and continue this country's legacy and continue to promote the fundamental freedoms of this country around the world. You stand against those veterans as a veteran, you're a piece of shit, in my opinion. Okay? You never caught on to what the reality was when you were in service. You never caught on to the realities of what we were fighting for, what were the reason why we were fighting, right? You went ahead and came back and joined the hate movement of this country, and you're a veteran, you're a big piece of shit.
You know, Robert, man, there's so much to talk about where this nation is headed, and we can't do it all in a 45-minute swath of time. Man, I could talk to you forever, as we have been doing for a number of years. But as we get ready to wrap this first segment of what I know is going to be many different discussions, what do you want to say to the American people as a veteran, as the son of immigrants, as a man who's clearly gotten a great education, a man who is clearly an activist who fights for injustice? What do you want to say to people who are listening and who may say that, you know, America, love it or leave it?
Mm-hmm. America, love it or leave it. You know, what I say to those people is, look in the mirror. Reflect on yourself. Reflect on who you are. Think about who you are. Look at your own image, at your own reflection. And then question yourself and ask yourself, am I the kind of person who supports hatred? Am I the kind of person who supports a president who is a felon? Am I the kind of person who supports a president covering pedophilia on an international scale, protecting international child trafficking networks by not releasing those files? Am I the kind of evil person that sees people that are not my skin color, not worthy of being in the same area that I'm in, not having the same opportunities that I have? Am I the kind of person who gets jealous when I see those people being successful? Am I the kind of person that blame them because I was not successful, instead of looking at myself and my inabilities to succeed and questioning my direction of livelihood? Look in yourself in the mirror and question yourself and see if you're happy with yourself doing all that, then you're the problem in this country.
You know, Robert, that's just an absolutely heartfelt words of reason. And Michael Jackson said it best: if you want to make the world a better place, take a look at yourself and make a change. Start with the man in the mirror.
That's right.
You know, my last words for today is, Robert, what you just talked about was bigger than any nationality. It was bigger than you know, any nation. You're talking about humanity. That's where we stop. It's where we start. It's where we stop. We're all human beings on this planet.
We got.
So those who want to separate and elevate the value of one human being over another is lost, right? You really are lost if you somehow, in your mind's eye, believe that you are a better human being than somebody else because of the color of your skin, because of the nation of your origin, or Robert, or because I have more money than somebody else, or because I'm a Republican and you're a Democrat. I mean, these are foolhardy ways of thinking.
Exactly.
And so people should, especially those who attach morality to themselves and elevate themselves above others based on their religious beliefs.
Right.
If you don't start with humanity and end with humanity, all the rest of that stuff means nothing, right?
That's right. That's right. If you have no morals for yourself, what makes you think people are going to respect you? And you're not going to get no respect from me if you have no morals.
All right, Robert. Man, thank you. We'll certainly get back at this. It's just too much to discuss in a short period of time. Thank you very much.
Thank
until
you.
I see you again.
Yes, sir.